and welcome to the Leadership Educator Podcast. My name is Dan Jenkins, and I'm Chair and Associate Professor of Leadership and Organizational Studies at the University of Southern Maine.
And I am Lauren Bullock, Assistant Professor of Instruction at Temple University, and we are both excited for this episode of the Leadership Educator Podcast with Scott Allen, Associate Professor of Management and Standard Products at the Dr. James S. Reed Chair in Management at John Carroll University. Woo! And as well as the chair of the BOD of the Collegiate Leadership Competition. Welcome, Scott.
Thank you. Thank you. It's good to be with the two of you.
So I'll fill you in for those listeners who don't know or haven't been following, haven't been listening to any episodes. This season, Dan and I plan on talking about conferences and associations and how to get the best out of your engagement. We know that it's important for organizations. We know how critical they are to our field. And we thought that it was important to speak with leadership educators in those organizations to share the resources and benefits of involvement.
That's right. And then COVID-19 happened and we changed alongside the rest of the world and started adding in episodes for leadership educators. So we knew that once the dust settled, it'd be important to use this platform and share what we could about the conversations happening during this major disruption. So we put together a list of people, individuals, leadership educators that we knew could share information that could really help us to continue the work that we're doing, whether we're working in curricular programs or co-curricular programs, and either whether we're finishing out our semesters, getting into a summer semester, planning for the fall, whatever that might look like. And so one of the things that really spurred a lot of thought for Lauren and I came from the webinar that I had facilitated for the ILA back in late March about transitioning to online for leadership educators. And we followed that up with a series of Zoom drop-in meetings, which again was kind of a shot in the dark. Would people show up if we did Zoom drop-in meetings? What does that even mean? And luckily we corralling some really brilliant women in the field to help us lead those conversations and kind of serve as the resident expert for each one of those. We found that there's some really vibrant conversations and about 40 or 50 people joined us each time. One of the questions that came up every single time was, how can we make the online leadership development experience feel more physical and personal? And so that got me thinking about, okay, well, we're using Zoom more often than anything else right now for our synchronous meetings, not only for our classes, but also for how we get together and converse with our colleagues, whether they be in another country or continent, or they might have used to be down the hall from you. And so what I wanted to do today was to bring on Scott Allen, who's someone who I've known for a while, and I'm going to embarrass him just a bit. And the reason that we brought him on was that he had posted some really, really engaging articles about using Zoom on LinkedIn recently. And knowing Scott, I thought, hey, this is an opportunity for me to not only embarrass him, but also bring him on as a guest. So I met Scott Allen as a very, very nervous doctoral student, where I had read an article that he had written with a colleague of his, and I wanted to use part of his study for some of the questions that I was going to have in my dissertation. And my advisor of my dissertation had said, hey, well, you know, you're going to have to ask permission. This is what we do. This is ethics. Haven't you read your IRB? And so I emailed very nervously, dear Dr. Allen, can I use your study? You're great. The study's great. Whatever it was. And I want to say within a day, if not the same day, I got the nicest email back. I wish I had saved it. Maybe it's somewhere in an archive. They just said, of course, anything I can do to help equals, you know, and I think you said, hey, and Nathan will probably say the same thing, but I can't speak for him. Can't remember if I ever heard back from you, from the co-author. I think I did eventually several days later. And so that is a story that I tell time and time again to students in my own program and, that are completing their master's thesis, as well as students that I run into that I mentor during ILA's research, Emerging Scholars Research Symposium and others is reach out to those individuals. You never know what type of, hopefully you get a positive response and you're able to use that information. But that conversation with Scott via email, I later met him in person at the Leadership Educators Institute, which I shared the story when Craig was on recently about it being at the University of South Florida where I was doing my doctoral studies, and the Leadership Educators Institute just happened to be there. And I remember seeing his name tag from across the room and I was like, oh, I'm going to go meet this guy. And I'm like, hey, Scott, you might not go. Oh yeah. I remember the email. He goes, anyone here you want to meet? And he's like, and I, before I even said anything, he goes, hey, Susan Comavez is over here. Let me go introduce you to her. And he's like, you should probably meet. And it was just like one person after another. And so it was just such an engaging you have such an engaging personality, and definitely consider you a mentor and a friend. And so excited to have you on and to get an opportunity to embarrass you on the podcast. So, Scott, welcome again. Getting the chance to embarrass you.
Well, I appreciate it, Dan. I remember that we were in the atrium at USF, I believe, when we first connected, and it was a reception. And I was just amazed that someone reached out about a paper I wrote, because I think one of the statistics, the average paper is read by about 7 people or something like that. So you were the one.
Right. That's right. It's like, I read your paper. Oh, you're the one. That's right. That's right. So,
I think it also speaks to nature of our leadership conferences, in that you walk up and someone will introduce you to Susan Cummings or the Scott Allens, and everyone's so personable in this space, and it's so easy to get, you know, connected to people who are doing great work in the field.
Right. Right.
Oh, and I agree.
And I think that also is a springboard for it. So we're thinking about this, you know, physical and personal leadership space, this inclusive environment that we try to, you know, capture in our leadership classrooms. So the articles that Scott had posted about using Zoom, so some of them have some fun titles. I'm going to read a couple of them. You know, 8 tips to help you bloom on Zoom, you know, how to make your Zoom presentations interactive and engaging, 16 ways, leading virtually, same what, different how, next level Zooming. You know, so there's just some really fun ways, because this Zoom is our new room. How do we make that transition? And going back to that question that kept coming up during these Zoom drop-in meetings was, you know, how do we make that online leadership development experience feel more physical and personal? So Scott, where did the inspiration for these articles come from? What pushed you to put these out?
Well, yeah, I'm going to go to some Heifetz real quick. I mean, Heifetz talks about adaptive challenges, and I think that's what we find ourselves in right now. We're facing somewhat of an adaptive challenge. There aren't really answers, no authority figures that we can go to on how we do leader development online. I mean, that's just kind of a fascinating puzzle. And so for me, it's an opportunity for exploration. And so I don't have the answer. I think the question you're asking, and Heifetz would say, I don't know that he would say this, but I'm going to interpret his work. I think just that question is a great springboard for thinking and brainstorming and ideating. Because again, I don't know that there's a person we can call right now that has the answer. So we are asking the question, we are thinking up experiments we can run, trying them out, and then learning rapidly. And so that's why, Lauren, Dan, I love the fact that you're serving as a platform for this conversation, because it's an important one. Because I think as we adjust, and Dan, we've talked a lot about this with the Collegiate Leadership Competition, as we adjust, and some studies suggest this might be 2 years. We hope that it's not 2 years, but how do we do this work? Same what, our goal is the same. I think our how is a little bit different. So at least an image that goes through my head when I think about this, it's almost like moving from a presentation where you can move around and you have space and you can work the room, to kind of being behind a podium. And we're limited in a little bit of a different way, but I think we can still connect. I think we can still make it work. And so I'm excited to have the conversation for sure.
I think you bring up a really good point in that this is an opportunity for adaptive challenges. I was recently reading, I think it was either Inside Higher Ed or Higher Ed Chronicle, where they talked about the 15 options for fall. And one of the my former grad students, who's now, you know, full-time employee at another institution, she was like, I didn't even think about there being those options. And so I love that the challenge now isn't, we can't do this. It's, so we have this platform. How are we going to do this? And how are we going to use the technology we have access to still meet that mission once our basic needs are met? So once we've affirmed that our house, you know, our grocery can be delivered, our house is safe, we still are employed. Like, once we move past that, how can we still do great work? And I think that's a lot of what your articles speak to. How can you use this platform for good? I'm a little curious, how did you get on this path? Like, what made you think, you know, talking about Bloom on Zoom and interactive presentations once all of this started to happen?
It was really just me needing to learn. And so as I was learning, I ran a couple experiments really early. So I've done some work in the Cleveland community with the Cleveland Leadership Center. And immediately I reached out to their executive director, who I've done some work with. I said, you know what? I'd love to do some sessions. My wife and I actually reached out and we said, we'd love to help out pro bono. We'll do some workshops. We call them the Way Forward workshops. So I kind of, it was a little bit of game theory on myself. I committed to some presentations and then I had to learn. And again, those presentations were then opportunities to experiment and learn and grow and at least figure out this platform in a different way. But then I had a mindset that the classroom was an opportunity to present and practice as well. So I maintained my Monday, Wednesday, Friday schedule with at least the two undergraduate courses that I had. And that was a practice, an opportunity for practice. Each session, I tried something completely different. I never within, I think it was probably 15 different sessions we did online. It was always a little bit of a different format so that I could learn, so that I could grow. So I did like a Lost at Sea exercise, but you all have done those Black Bear or Lost at Sea or Earthquake. There are these exercises where, you know, synergy is supposed to occur. Of course, in my second section, no one achieved synergy. They all did better by themselves than as a group. But, you know, so I tried that. And another time I had in a guest speaker and I just tried out what that format could look like. One time I had a Google Doc that was a shared doc. Everyone could work on it at the same time. And we did group brainstorming. I'm thinking of, and Dan, we've been engaged in these conversations forever,
right?
Whether it's, I call them sources of learning or you called them, what is your terminology?
Instructional strategies.
Instructional strategies, yeah, which I think is probably the correct term. But, you know, we have been, I know that the two of us have been kind of fascinated by all these different little interventions we can be using given our goals.
Right.
And so I don't think online is any different. You know, for instance, I just came across a resource the other day. We could talk about this, but it's called Arist, A-R-I-S-T, and then it's arist.co.co. It's a texting platform. It's courses by text. So each day you receive, so I did one. I did one on the pandemic, on COVID-19. What is it? And you can take this for free. But blew my mind that a course would be offered by text. So another platform, another kind of mode of learning, but each day you receive a 1200 word text, no more than 1200 words, and it's kind of a drip campaign. So imagine that that becomes part of CLC or the Collegiate Leadership Competition. So one of us has to have our eyes peeled and really searching and looking for what could apply in this new kind of context. And I know the two of you have probably been experimenting as well. I think then we need a platform to start really congregating all of these different ideas so that we can rapidly learn. Now, one other quick thing, and then I'm going to shut up. I have a podcast as well, and I've been in a lot of conversations with leadership educators lately. And those conversations have grounded me back into a very, very simple, simple reality. And that is, we still need to be building relationships and connecting with our students. I think that's probably almost the most important thing we can be doing. So as I design my class for the summer, I've built in time for one-on-ones with each student, which is much more than I do in person, but I have to build a relationship. I have to make a connection. I have to learn about them and I have to make that a priority. And again, same what, just a different how. In the classroom, I would do it by bantering back and forth, an informal talk before class, et cetera. But in this, I think that is just making sure that we're building that one-on-one relationship. I think if we kind of march in, unload, you know, Canvas modules on them and pretend like we don't care or come off like we don't care or that we want to build a relationship, I think that's a recipe for disaster, especially in our business. So I'd love to hear what you guys think.
Oh, it's really interesting, Scott. And that's one of the first things. And oftentimes the first place that I've started when, you know, we were experimenting at Southern Maine with Adobe Connect before, you know, that before Zoom, and it was clunky. And I think even may have run a session on like Blackboard Illuminate, you know, 7 or 8 years ago, because we had students that were interested in our master's program that were all over Maine and all over Northern New England. And they still wanted to be a part of the dialogue, because, you know, going back to your point about sources of learning, you know, we would have learned in our research on leadership education is that discussion is our, you know, primary, our signature pedagogy. And so the discussion board can be great, but it has its limits, just as other types of dialogue do. But when we're able to get individuals together in any format, you know, like you said, it's a different how. The what is still, it's dialogue, it's discussion, it's interaction, it's engagement with one another, and how personal we can make that really depends on the facilitator. And so it's, what questions do you ask? What questions do you, how do you frame your questions? What types of activities, whether you're using media or you're using images or you're using, putting them in small breakout groups, or you're, you know, it depends on how deep you want to go, and how creative you can get in that space. If you, you know, can you use props? And I used to do an activity in the classroom, and I've since stopped. Maybe I've matured, or maybe I'm not sure, I should return back to it. But I have a big Rubbermaid full of props, because I used to have students on the first day of class do skits where I would just give them random bags of props and give them scenarios like, you know, late night at the library studying, or, you know, an afternoon in the food court, you know, on campus, and just give them these random sets of props, and they would have to act these out, and they got to know each other, and I would debrief with them, not just throw them, you know, and do this for no reason, but we debrief and say, well, why did I do this? Like, because you want to laugh at us. No. Let's think deeper about this. It's like, no, because you wanted us to get to know each other. You wanted us to kind of break down some vulnerability. I don't know if they use the vulnerability term, because Brene Brown hadn't yet evolved at that point. But understanding how important those types of engaging conversations were with each other to just break that ice. And okay, how do we then do that online? What are some ways to do that where we still get those laughs and those stories and those personal touches? I think we just have to be creative, but to understand, like, this is our new creative canvas. Now what? You know, and so that's what I think really drew me into the articles that you had posted was, okay, here are some really fun ways to do this. And we had exchanged some texts about, you know, somebody was able to rent a llama to appear on their Zoom meeting. I mean, these are the types of things, you know, it's not just the virtual backgrounds, which I think people have taken some fun liberties with, but there are all kinds of really, really fun things that you can do.
Oh, totally. Totally. And I think whether it's Arist, or I came across another website that was called Mural. And Mural is interesting because it's like a virtual post-it note resource. So, or the shared Google Doc for brainstorming, or a Lost at Sea activity that we can all do. Or, you know, I'm even going to try, and I'm going to break my, I have a Wednesday night, actually it's Tuesday and Thursday night courses this summer. And so once a week, we're going to break out into 30-minute, just smaller group dialogues that I'm going to facilitate and try and connect the learning. So again, can I build a relationship? Can I connect? And can I run some experiments to see if we can do this just as well? I mean, we've talked in the past some of the different objectives for education, or different paradigms of learning. So, you know, you have the behaviorist paradigm and the humanist paradigm, cognitivist paradigm, social cognitive, which would be social learning theory, or constructivist. So I think those five different paradigms of learning, I'm used to putting a fair amount of skill building and experiential in the classroom. And when we're face to face, that's easier to do. This is a little bit of an opportunity for me to go a little deeper into that humanistic space. And I'm going to have to use some different tools, a lot more personal reflection, and a lot more opportunities for even the students to dialogue with their parents and dialogue with mentors. So it's a time of experimentation. And I don't know that any one person has the answer right now. Now, when it comes to experiential, and we've talked a lot about this, Dan, Lauren, I'd love to hear your thoughts. I think we still can do it. Literally outside of the room I'm sitting in right now, my son is on a team of six others playing Overwatch. I think it's a team of six. And they're not in the same place, but that's been one of his primary outlets to connect and be with students and be with his friends. And so there's all kinds of online opportunities, whether that's online escape rooms or multiplayer massive online games. Obviously, we would not want a first-person shooter type game, but how can we identify online experiences because I don't think, and I just had the CHRO, Chief Human Resources Officer from KeyBank, Fortune 500 in class the other day, speaking to my junior management and human resources majors. And he said, look, virtual teams and leading virtual teams, that is going nowhere. It's probably only going to increase. So I think if we're learning that now, and if we're incorporating that into some of our experiences, I don't know, it feels like the forefront to me, or a forefront, or at least a new frontier that we can be learning pretty rapidly.
I have so many thoughts on this, and I agree. I think we're setting ourselves up for a new hybrid nature. So we're going to go back to some in-person stuff, but we're going to keep an increased level of tech use in our personal and professional spaces, which I think before this was very divided. I've been to more virtual social events in the last 2 months ever in my life. Like my sister, my poor baby sister turned 35, and we had to have her party online. And I felt so bad because the initial conversation was Vegas. And I'm like, we can't go to Vegas. What can we do? But we still had a great time in that space. And my son has been to birthday parties online. So I think some of this virtual space stuff will stay there, not all of it. But I think we are wise to think about, what does this new hybrid reality look like? I think the challenge, and some little bit of background. So I'm studying faculty-student relationships currently in my doctoral work, because I'm fascinated with, you know, how do faculty members decide what to change as they're leading their classroom space? And so all of what we're going through now feels like this live, like petri dish of sorts. But your comments made me think, you know, students, young people are open to this. It's not that they're more skilled. They're just more open than I think some of us that are more set in our ways. It also makes me think, like, do we think leadership educators are, I don't want to say better, are we more open to change because we study this for a living and we preach that you have to model this behavior and you have to lead change? And we talk about change management and the change equation and Lewin's phase model, all those things. Like, now we kind of got to put up or shut up, right? And so I think that's the space that we're living in, which I think is why we're excited about it. And, well, at least I'm excited. I know Dan's excited about it because we've had some of the conversations. But you feel me, right, Scott? This is like, this is a beautiful opportunity for us. And I'm just curious, are we in this space as leadership educators because this is our wheelhouse? Are our peers in accounting, or our peers in drama, or our peers in political science, are they also in that space? And how, and is this an opportunity for leadership educators to take the lead in this and walk down that path?
Well, I think there's opportunity. So I'm going to go back to your example of either your son's birthday party or your sister's birthday.
My sister's.
Yes. And so he's attended birthday parties online. My children literally turned on the 15th of April. It was a snowstorm and it was during the pandemic. And we had some signs out in their front yard and kids just paraded by. It was probably one of the best birthday parties they've ever had. I mean, it was just beautiful. It was wonderful. It was sad in certain ways, but it was really, really cool in certain ways. Or I imagine at your sister's birthday party, some people showed up that probably wouldn't have been able to. And probably wouldn't been able to. So there's opportunity baked in all of this if we see that. So when you say, do leadership educators have an opportunity to lead? I think we do. I think we have to hustle. I think we have to figure it out. I think we have to let go of the limitations that potentially exist. And in this new reality, figure it out. I mean, literally, again, I'm going to go back to my son playing that game. There's leadership development opportunities involved in that game. They are communicating. They're working as a team. He's saying, go, 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 or do this or do that. And he's kind of leading and influencing other digital avatars to behave in a certain way. They're navigating stressors. They're problem solving. He's trying to influence his peers. So it baked in that whole experience. I don't care if it's any online game. If we looked at that experience he's having through the lens of leadership education, it's ripe. It's ripe. And so I think it's up to us to see the opportunities, to run the experiments, to figure out rapidly what's working, what isn't working. I think we need to kind of amass that list of instructional strategies or opportunities that we can blend into the learning experience. And so I do. I see it as an opportunity. And, you know, I had said to a colleague a while back, this isn't to bag on what we normally do. It is in a way. But I said to her, I'm a little sick of tape and balls and rope and that type of stuff. I'm kind of through with it. I get it. And we still aren't totally there on simulating an experience. And we call it experiential, but it's kind of maybe 20 minutes of an activity. We have to go beyond this. There's opportunity beyond this, at least. And so I think this is forcing our hand in some ways to capitalize on some of those opportunities. I really believe that. So that's kind of, I love how you're thinking, because optimism and opportunity, I believe, has to be a part of our mindset if we are going to lead in this way, Lauren.
Oh, I love that. I'm a sucker for, what do you call those things where you have matching letters at the beginning? You see my Florida State education is showing optimism and opportunity. I feel like that's a bumper sticker that would motivate us through life.
Well, you know? I mean, we can sit here and commiserate on what we've lost or what's changed or what's different. But again, we have the same what? We have the same mission, which is develop leaders.
Yeah.
Our how is different. And I think our ability to adapt and to model, to your point, flexibility, agility, you know what? Yeah. Put up or shut up, leadership educators, make it happen and do it well. And yes. Can we do it better? Can we thrive? Right. Yeah.
Well, I taught a change, communicating organizational change class. And if I failed at transitioning my students online, they would have jumped ship midway through the semester. And one of the most gratifying pieces of information, so I at the end of having a little bit of time for reflection, my students overwhelmingly said, you did an amazing job at transitioning our class online. And it taught me more about leadership than anything that you've talked about in the classroom, simply because you were living what you were teaching us. And if you didn't, then we wouldn't have said it to you, but we definitely would have walked away with that. And that's why I kind of asked that question, if we're in this space of leadership, are we held to a higher standard in terms of how we're navigating this? And also, are our faculty peers seeing themselves as leaders? I know I've talked to some who do and some who don't, and I'm wondering if this is an opportunity to really, dig back in with that. Faculty, we are leaders. We are responsible for that classroom. And what are some of the things we need to be conscious of? I know I lead with care and challenge. So my students will often say, you're stern, but you're supportive. And it's that's where I should be in this space. And how can we get our peers and others to communicate those things to them? So I feel like I could talk all day to y'all.
It's a fascinating conversation.
What else is fascinating? I'm thinking about what you were sharing and talking about thinking about the games, the online gaming that your son was doing, Scott and Lauren, and think, the experiences that our young learners are having now, I think are different. I was reflecting in my head as I was listening to y'all share. There was an article that I co-wrote years ago where we were talking about virtual spaces and what leadership education would look like in 2050, which, seems way off at this point. But we're thinking about...
Here we are.
Right, and here we are, not too far. And what types of experiences might students have had when, particularly when you're, working with freshmen or sophomores, traditional age, where they may not have had a job. And, we kept asking students to reflect because we know how powerful reflection is in the classroom. And I remember this young man waited after class to talk to me, and he said, "Hey, I'm really having some trouble working on this assignment on looking at teams and leadership." He's like, I haven't been on a team. And I said, well, what do you like to do for fun? He goes, well, he's like, don't laugh at me. I was like, well, I'm not gonna laugh. He goes, well, I play a lot of World of Warcraft. I go, tell me more about that. And he goes, well, I have a clan, and we go on missions together.
Yep.
And he literally was the moderator, or the, I don't know what you call the leader of the clan, but he was the guy. He was posting on these chat boards and getting people together, and they'd go on missions. I'm like, dude, write about that. That's awesome.
Yeah.
And he perked up and lit up, and he wrote about those experiences. And you know what? His papers were better than 90% of the papers in that classroom. Now, and he was so ahead of his time we're talking, I don't know, maybe 10 years ago, because I haven't been teaching more than about 11 or 12 years, but that always rang true with me. And I always remember that conversation, because now that is the norm. I mean, we are engaging more in those types of team building activities. I mean, they're in the team, you know, I'm looking out my window. I don't see a team anywhere. I mean, you can't get close. You can't get more than six feet from each other. And so we're able to do so much more, whether it's birthday parties or like you had mentioned, Scott, about, you know, people that might not have been able to afford to go to Vegas for Lauren's sister's birthday, that now they can come on Zoom.
Yes.
And I can't tell you how many reunions and interactions and things I've had in the last few months, and guest speakers too in classes that we wouldn't have been able to
have. You never would have been able to secure, right? I mean, so I was teaching a course on Wednesday nights on technologies enabling disruption. And the reality I had, I mean, in the previous live version, we would be at a different company every week. And so that confined us to Cleveland. Well, now, as we switched to online, I invited a gentleman from Seattle who worked for Zillow and works on machine learning. And all of a sudden, this whole new, so again, there's new possibilities. I mean, it's terrible that COVID-19 has had its place in our experiences. And this spring, it as I had my students watch our governor and our head of our Department of Health, literally their tweets modeled emotionally intelligent leadership like you would not believe. There's opportunity there. This is real-time leadership that you can watch. In addition, it was amazing because I had my students blog a lot every couple days. They had an opportunity to observe their parents in a way they'd never even thought of. You know, mom is leading from the kitchen table, and they're overhearing mom leading and hearing some of the things that we've been discussing in class that's happening right in front of them right now that they never would have had exposure to. So I think it's up to us to make those connections, to help make those connections, to keep our own eyes peeled, to think in possibilities, because it's all around us. The educator, whether it's that online gaming, whether it's how people are responding to the pandemic, how CEOs right now are responding. There's a beautiful letter from the CEO of Starbucks. I don't know if you've all have seen that, but there's so much opportunity. I kind of come back to, I can't stress enough how much I think just us continuing to build relationships with the students and getting to know them personally and on an individual level. I did one-on-one meetings with every student of mine yesterday, just a 5-minute, like kind of closing the book. But it was incredible. It was awesome. And so I think we may need to up that a little bit in this online space, make that more of a priority, be more intentional. I loved your idea, Dan, of bringing props. I haven't done props, but I've done this thing called special object. And so someone brings a special object to class on first night and they share why that has meaning to them. And you can get some really powerful stories very quickly. I just wrote it down. I'm going to do that on my first little night of small group meetings. So I just think that's, for me, that's what I continually reflect on right now is how do we keep that kind of high touch, personalized feeling in this new medium? And then I think that buys us patience and authentic feedback on the part of the students. Lauren, I love that story that they were, obviously you've made a connection and built a relationship with them because they're willing to share that with you. Right? They're willing to share those stories and that feedback. And we need that feedback right now because, and my students the other day, I call it a plus delta at the end of every class. What did you like? What should I continue to do? What should I change? What should I not do in the future? And what they continued to like was that I was amazed. They liked meeting and connecting and doing breakout rooms and being with their classmates. And so I don't know. It's an interesting time. I think back to the change, Lauren, kind of the fight, flight, freeze. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's, mm-hmm. if that's even relevant. That's Lewin, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Is that mm-hmm. Lewin? I see in my own community organizations that are fighting, and I don't mean that in a negative sense, but they've got hustle and they're trying to figure it out. Arts organizations that are hustling and trying to figure it out. And then there's some organizations that are just kind of frozen and they don't know what to do. They're paralyzed. And I love what you said earlier, Lauren. We have an opportunity here. We really do to take the lead and to learn quickly and to provide a really incredible learning experience.
Yeah, I thank you for sharing that. It ties together. It's just such great advice, I think, as we move forward in this. Like, yeah, you could think about what we lost and what could be and what might happen, and you could spend that time in worrying, but it may be a better move and maybe how you can best support your students by moving into that. This is an opportunity, and how can we approach it with optimism as best we can?
And all spring, I mean, when we moved online, I had to say to them, please provide me feedback. Please provide me feedback. What are you enjoying? What should we do differently? If we do something one day in class, because I mentioned to you that every day was different.
Yeah.
And you know, it wasn't a lot of students, but five or six times people would write me after class and say, you know, I really liked that today. That was awesome. If we could do a little more of that, that'd be great. Okay, cool. I've got a little nugget of data and feedback. I can file that away.
Yeah. Well, we think about this current generation of students, they've always been coached and advised. So this to them, like you offering that opportunity to give feedback is very normal and expected of them. So when they don't get those opportunities, I think that's when they don't have that trust that we need, as well as you being vulnerable and saying like, hey, I'm not perfect in this space. I want to make sure that this is fulfilling and meaningful for you. Yes. I need your input to share that. I think that's something that is so valuable in our teaching practice. And while we could talk to you all day, we do need to wrap this up.
I
know, right? Oh, we've totally enjoyed having you today. You have been a breath of fresh air, and we would love for you to come back, especially as this starts to develop and grow. We would love to have you back. Dan, what am I missing? Anything else I need?
No, just let folks know about Scott's podcast, and you can check him out, www.scottjallen.net. He's got some really, really cool stuff going on over there, and I can learn a little bit more about his recent ventures with technology and leadership and disruptive technologies.
Awesome. Thank you. Thanks, you too. It's been wonderful. It's such a fun conversation. I love the fact that you all are creating this space to have that conversation, because it's an important one for sure. So keep doing great work. And keep, was it Kuzes and Posner who said leaders go first?
That's right.
You guys are going first.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you so much,
Scott. Take care.
And that wraps up this episode of the Leadership Educator Podcast. We hope you enjoyed listening at home or walking your dog or engaging in another activity where you are practicing social distancing.
We are the gurus of social distance podcasting, as we are separated by 6 states, more than the CDC required 6 feet.
Well, that is what we do. So way to be a leader in that area. So jokes aside, thank you for joining us today. We invite you to follow us on Twitter. I am at @Dr_leadership, and Lauren is at @MrsLaurjb. That's Miss Laura JB. We want to encourage you to listen to the full episodes as they are released, as we can only share a fraction of the amazing stories that our guests shared. You can find the episodes wherever podcasts are available, and we also encourage you to rate us 5 stars, as the more you rate us, the easier it is for others to find us.
We'd also like to thank the James M. Cox Jr. Institute for Journalism, Innovation, Management, and Leadership within the Grady College of Journalism and Mass Communication at the University of Georgia. The support was facilitated by Dr. Keith Herndon, William S. Morris Chair in New Strategy and Management.
That's right. And our wonderful theme music was composed, performed, and mixed by Dr. Matthew White, trumpeter, composer, and educator. And he's currently the Associate Professor of Trumpet, Coordinator of Jazz and Commercial Music, and Director of Ensembles at Coastal Carolina University. He's also a Guggenheim Fellow, some new news. You can check him out, at www.mattwhitejazz.com. Matt, thank you so much for sharing your musical genius with our audience. And finally, thank you to the Association of Leadership Educators. Check out what the ALE has to offer at leadershipeducators.org. And we hope you will listen to our next episode wherever you get your podcasts.